You are not to discuss this matter amongst yourselves.
We don't submit reports or ask approval for specific operations, if that's what you mean. We are an autonomous department.
Any questions?
Broadcasting from an abandoned subspace relay orbiting Risa, this is Section 31, gathering intelligence for you on Star Trek CCG. Now reporting in, operatives Dan and Rogue.
Welcome to Section 31, episode number 25. I am Dan Hammond.
And I am Rogue Schindler.
On this week's episode, we have captured Brad Fruiter, the lead designer for the Star Trek 2nd Edition, and we will interrogate him for many minutes.
Here on Special Detachment, captured by one of our field agents, we have absconded with lead designer, continuing committee member, and former Deciferian, Brad DeFruiter.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys, even though I'm here totally against my will.
Well, it's good to have you.
Don't worry, you won't remember anything. So,
sounds like my last date.
Can you go ahead and give us a quick background on your gaming experience in general and your experience with Star Trek in particular?
I used to be a big Magic the Gathering player. I played Star Trek right when it came out, and suddenly everything clicked for me with the game. And then from there, I just, you know, met some people and learned a lot more, and eventually I moved to becoming a playtester, and then from a playtester, I got a be a little bit more of a Decipher insider, and then I got a job at Decipher, and then of course, the moment I get hired by Decipher, my world ranking dropped, and I got the job at Decipher and started being the game designer right off the bat. It was a nice experience.
What was the first Trek set that you had a hand in back at Decipher?
That would be the Borg, for designing-wise. I can't remember the first one that I play tested. I know the first one that I got flown to Norfolk, Virginia to play test with at Decipher was Trouble with Tribbles. And I just recently had some conversations with some of the other guys that got flown out to that one about experiences that we had while we were out there, like coffee and things of importance like that.
Did you get to work on anything else? You did some work in Rings, right?
While I was at Decipher, Evan Lawrence and I did Beyblade, which I know got trounced pretty bad, and also the fact that the Beyblade as a license was not cool by the time our game came out. But I still say it's a really great game if you could get past how it looks. It's got a lot going on for it. And then I'd always had a little bit to do with Lord of the Rings, if it was just playtesting in an office, to even having some discussions. And slowly we got to a point where some things needed to change in Lord of the Rings, and I got brought on, and then a little bit after that, Evan got brought on as well, and we both worked on Rings. I did a lot of Lord of the Rings stuff. I would say that outside of maybe Tom Lischke or Joe Allred, I think I designed more cards for Lord of the Rings than any other designer that was at Decipher. Mm.
Since you put it that way, I feel like I have to ask, when you say some things had to change, did you have a hand in the upheaval of the shadow side, where everything went from sort of affiliation based to race based and made all the old cards useless?
Yeah. I really tried to fight to stop going into that. I wanted to do some things different with the minion side, to change how the minions were costed is really what I wanted to change. And anytime I tried to do that, they'd say, well, yeah, you can do your new costume when we come across with all new races. And it was a big challenge. One of the big things against it was we just didn't have the images and we needed to start over. And of course, right after we started over, we got a whole bunch of more new images. So it was a little bit frustrating all around. But yeah, I did a lot of that. And I know that not all the cards I worked on were that popular with the players, and it's frustrating to be in that position, but you know, I don't know how much I would have really changed for Lord of the Rings.
Did you move into another game? Did you do anything with Wars in its brief appearance at Decipher?
We had a lot of cooks working on that, and I could see it early on when we were told that any designer that wanted to work on Wars would have a chance to work as much as they wanted to on Wars. I realized that that my input needed to be limited, or we would really go into the too many cooks type of situation, and it would turn out bad. So my big thing was, I just, any time a big decision came around, I said, "Will you still be able to draft this game?" And I constantly pushed for things to happen in draft. I got a chance to work a little bit with the rarity of the first set just to make sure that the game was draftable. Unfortunately, I don't think it turned out to be as draftable as we wanted to in the end. And I think maybe some of my pushes for it being draftable didn't help keep the game quite as pure. It made it too easy to mix the different races and stuff in the game, and or the factions in the game. And I think it was a little too easy to mix factions in that game, and that may have been an issue with it.
How much of the decision of you know, draftability and different factions, how much of that carried over to the design that you did worked on in Tui? Were you in on that?
Well, yeah. One of the big things with Second Edition was we knew that it had to be able to be played in some sort of limited format. We knew that draft would be difficult just because of missions and some other things that, you know, I think are blatantly clear now. But those first five expansions were totally designed around on the commons. I mean, we would sit for hours arguing about rarity because we knew we had to have a certain amount of cards moved down to the common level so that if someone was going to draft, that it would be an easier event. But a lot of those decisions were made with the idea that you get a starter deck and then you draft some boosters. And I know that's not the most purest draft, and that's not what a lot of people wanted to do in the end. And sometimes I would want more, but that was what the plan was, and we tried to stick with it as best we could.
Do you get to play much anymore?
I don't play as much as I want to. I do a little bit of against the fishbowl kind of things. But no, in fact, it would probably be better if I actually was playing a little bit more, but I don't.
Did you have a favorite affiliation while you're playing, or possibly a deck type?
Yeah, you know, what I really liked was tense games that came down the wire. I think that if I was really competitive, I would be looking for things that went quick and were that you knew were going to win, that were consistent. But I really like playing with stuff where I'm not sure if I'm going to win, and I've got to use my abilities as a player, or I've got to lean on my dilemma pile while my deck gets together and stuff like that. That's for some reasons I love playing the Dominion. There are lots of fun like that. I love playing with the Maquis for a similar thing, as I can find ways to slow down my opponent until I get all my stuff together. I have to say that right now, if I was told, you know, you need to go play competitively and you need to play in this tournament and you need to really try to win, I would look at the original series. I know that the original series just did well in the U.S. Nationals West, and I haven't seen the deck list, so I don't know what it's doing. But something that Jeffrey Peterson brought to Worlds this year is something that I would play, a Mirror Universe TOS deck. I might have a few other different selections of cards than what he had, but I'd really try to do something like that where I have options to change up how I'm playing as I play. And Evil McCoy is underrated. He is so...
Evil McCoy is evil.
Indeed.
Make it sound so ominous.
As I recall, at one point, some of our playtest agents mentioned that over the course of the development of Tui over the past several years, there's been a lot of discussion about some kind of Tui draft product, a pack or a set of draft rules, something beyond, more general, beyond dangerous missions. Was there a reason that never came to fruition? And is there something that might be possible to come out with now that the continuing committee is handling things?
I think it has a much better chance of happening with the continuing committee coming up. One reason why draft was popular in Cypher was because of sales, because we could sell more boosters with it. The thing was is that we didn't always have a lot of excess product around at times, and when we did have excess product around, it was easier just to make a Reflections 2.0 or a small boutique set and repackage some products and try to stick the old product on players with the idea of you can get 6 new cards if you buy some of our old stuff and buy it in this box. So I think that it was often decided that that was the best way to go with Star Trek. And I'm not saying that Dangerous Missions didn't work. It's just it didn't work well. If they really wanted to do that, they needed to take some people off to the side and have them work only on that and nothing else. And that just wasn't going to happen in the environment.
There were a few, obviously, sales and marketing rules and constrictions that you had to have back at Decipher. Are there anything similar driving you now? I mean, you really don't have much of a deadline other than, you know, the continuing committee is expected to produce card sets every once in a while or whatever. Is there anything else that kind of guides your hand as the set design goes on?
Yeah, I like to set schedules. I'm not that good at being an organized person, but if I tell people that we're going to try to do things by certain dates, we really try to do things by those dates. Mr. Plain, our chairman, is very, very good at making sure to remind me when deadlines are coming up and that I get my stuff and organized and going. I mean, I wish people could see half of the stuff he does behind the scenes, because he does put a lot of work into these type of things. But I try to keep some of that organization that was there. You know, I don't want us to go long distances between expansion releases, and I don't want us to drop expansion on top of expansion either. I want to give what I would think would be the right amount of time between expansions, and that's something we talk about, something we work on. And I think that actually helps to make sure that there's a better product coming out. If we need more time, I'm going to ask for more time, or I'm going to demand time. And this has just recently happened with Lebowski raised the stakes. I needed a little bit more time, and I let the chairman know, and he said, all right. And he made adjustments on his end to make sure that we could still get some information out to the players, let them know that, you know, this expansion is still coming, and there's some fun stuff in it, you know, and there's some great stuff in it for the game. But at the same time, I just needed more time to work on the expansion.
Does the time from start to finish of an expansion, has that changed since, back when they were very large?
No. It takes about the same amount of time. The only thing that we have a little bit more time with is that I'm working multiple expansions into the future right now. And when I say working, that's a very, very loose concept. It's more of that I'm just laying down foundations for early stuff, putting together design teams for early stuff for the next few expansions. I didn't always have that luxury at Decipher, because when I would get ready to work on the next expansion, I still had to do press sheet stuff and production stuff, and we had to lay stuff out, and I had to go back and forth about art with stuff. I had to do press releases. You know, there's lots of little things that happen and go on out there that I need to do differently, that I don't have to do anymore, because there's people in the continuing committee that do these things, or there are things that we don't need to worry about. You know, there's no worry about the press sheet and the appearance that cards are going to actually look like they're random in packs, because they're not. There was never any random cards were never put in packs randomly. We just tried to make it look like they were random.
The reason I asked is every once in a while, you know, a deck archetype will come up, and part of the design, I assume, is to take a look at that, see why it works, and maybe design something in the future that takes away a little bit from it or adds that to other things to kind of keep things on balanced ground. Has that aspect changed?
Yes, a little bit, but I still don't have the lead the time that I want. Even if I see. If something was to come out right now, it's still not going to be out soon enough, because by the time Raise the Stakes gets released, there's still going to be enough time of people out playing out there and talking about it. Because with the internet the way it is now, I mean, word spreads fast and people talk things throughout fast. It'll seem like it's a bigger issue than what it is, and it'll seem like a lot more time has passed than it actually has passed. So it's hard to fight that perception sometimes, but I do try to really change some things. I also, when I look at some of these things to analyze these things, I really also look to say, is there something the players can do right now to fight against this or to make this work better, or you know, whatnot. Is there something they can do now? Because I don't want to go out making cards that change the game if the game doesn't need to be changed, or it's not fun to change the game in that direction. So there's a little bit there's a little bit of going both ways, and I find this constantly happens in design. Is for every push there's a pull, and it can be frustrating when, you know, half of you says go left and half of you says go right, and you have to choose one to do, you know, or choose something different and say, no, I'm going straight ahead. And it can be frustrating at times, but I think the end products are always worth it. And if people enjoy the game and want to play the game, then it's worth it. It's always worth it.
All right. Well, you mentioned Raise the Stakes, which, as I understand it, is the upcoming virtual set. I know a lot of people were excited, of course, that the continuing committee was going to be continuing to make sets after the demise of Decipher. However, the last two sets have not gotten the warmest of welcomes, sort of a lukewarm reception. But there is a lot of positive, exciting buzz around Raise the Stakes. Can you tell us anything about that? Can you tell us why we should be excited about this new set coming out?
And he cuts out. That's fantastic.
Oh, wow.
I suspect Ron.
Well, that's all the intelligence we have this year.
I don't think you could have scripted that. That was amazing.
We're going to have to reestablish our subspace link with our agent that has captured Mr. Defruiter. In the meantime,
I am Sir Dan.
And I am Sir Rogue.
And once again, it's time to expand your power in the universe.
And I have a crew of Romulans. We're going to complete the mission Treat Plague Ship for 20 points. And among that crew is Tamarith. I'm going to use her medical to score a bonus 5 and give me 25 to end.
Are you taking over this role, are you?
Hey, you know what? You started it.